The universal potential of our statements. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with thought for today. The universal potential of our statements. Oh, seldom we recognize the universal potential of our statements. We say, I'm tired. We say, I'm sick. We say, I'm sad. We say, I'm all these dreadful things. And then we are those things, and we wonder how it happened. Well, subtly saying it, positively saying it, dynamically saying it, whatever we say it, if we just say it because we believe it, then that's what we demonstrate in our life. We demonstrate in our life the statements that we have in our thought, that we have in our mind, that we have in our heart. They can be ever so apparently meaningless statements, ever so continuous statements that we say all too often about ourselves, and we wonder why these statements have an effect on us when we're really not giving them any attention. We're really not giving them any power. We're not saying, I like me, I like me, I like me. And why is it that when we just say, oh, I like me, yeah, I'm nice, or I'm sick, oh, I feel so sad, oh, I'm rich, I'm rich, and you only got 5 cents in your pocket, and I'm rich, oh, I feel so rich, and you see the sense of the richness, the sense of the feeling, the sense of the attitude, the essence of it. Universal potential of our statements is fantastic, and we don't recognize it and we don't realize it. Now you say, well, I'm going to start realizing it right now. I'm going to start recognizing it right now. I'm going to start realizing it right now. I'm going to make statements that I want to be in my life, and I'm going to have these things happen. Well, you blew it. You blew it. Anytime we make a statement, we say, I want it, or I like it, or I wish, we blew it. When a little boy wishes for a horse, he's not wishing for a horse, he's seeing himself with a horse, he's seeing himself with whatever it is he has in his mind. When a wife says, I wish we could go to the movies tonight, she doesn't mean she wishes she could go to the movies. She means she's putting a cause in motion that she's going to go to the movies tonight. And no matter what happens, it's going to work out ideally that she can go. And if anybody else wants to go too, that's just fine. But she visualizes herself going. Okay, now, when a woman makes a beautiful meal and sets it on the table, and the family has the a football game or some activity on their mind that keeps them wanting to look away from the food and look at the television screen or the radio or whatever it is that might be drawing their attention. And the wife says, oh dear, here I prepared this wonderful meal and nobody's appreciating it. Well, if the wife, instead of making a silly statement like that, which is giving power to something she doesn't want, would say, I am making the most delicious meal tonight, and it's wonderful, and I love it, and I think it is so fantastic. And then she sits down to enjoy her meal. And because she has this attitude that she's sitting down to enjoy a most delicious meal, a most wonderful meal that she's prepared with love and with joy, and she has great expectation of eating it and enjoying it. Now, if anybody else does, doesn't matter to her. She doesn't create the rest of the world doing anything. She just creates herself thoroughly enjoying the meal. Now, to thoroughly enjoy the meal does not mean it is interrupted. Does not mean that other people who are dining with you are distracted from the meal. It means that that meal is thoroughly enjoyed in all aspects. Now, she's not against the television. She's not against the sports game. She's not against distractions. But she says, this meal is so delightful. People just enjoy it thoroughly, 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 just like me. And if that's her choice, that's okay. Now, is she going to force others not to watch television or not to watch the game or not to be interested in a distraction? No. If that is her force, then she is saying the meal is not primary. It is not wonderful. It is not something that really attracts the attention. And yet, if that is what it is, then that's where the thought should be. Now, if you give a youngster a bowl of ice cream, do you think that youngster is interested in anything other than the bowl of ice cream? If you give someone a beautiful piece of cake, it's just a gorgeous piece of cake, and you don't have to put any cream on top of it, you don't have to put any ice cream with it, you don't have to put anything with it to make it good, it is just so good that people take a bite out of it, and they say, wow, this is fantastic. But now, you see, when that is in your consciousness, then that's the universal potential of your statement. Your universal potential of your statement is, this is the best cake. Oh, it is so good. It is so wonderful. And you just thoroughly love it, enjoy it, and eat it. And then everyone around you has that same attitude that you do because you are the one who has prepared it. Now, when a mother lovingly prepares a table and sets it with great joy, not because people must enjoy it, but because the joy of her heart is in setting the table, everyone senses the setting of the table and how wonderful it is. Here at the Absolute Monastery, we have many people dining with us. Many are guests, many are members, many are students, many are monks. We're all sitting at the dining room table. And we have the lazy Susan on the dining room table. Well, now, unfortunately, it is usually one more than one person who is helping to prepare the table and the meal. If it were one person, everything would be ideal. But it's several people. And one person makes the meal, and another person sets the table, and another person puts the condiments on the table, and all the good things. Well, now, everyone doesn't have the same interest, the same drama of the meal as the others. And so, they sometimes forget to put some of the condiments on the table. Or they forget to put water glasses on the table. Or they say, I'm serving the coffee, and you will get coffee, and I will serve it to you. And then they don't. And so I say, I don't ask. If they don't want to serve me coffee after telling me that they're serving the coffee, I won't ask. If they don't want to serve me tea after I tell them that I want tea, I won't ask. Because I am sitting there enjoying the meal, and I am not feeling that the meal is not complete. If I say, I'd like a cup of coffee, their first comment is, oh dear, I forgot to put the coffee on. Oh dear, I forgot to do this. Oh dear. And they make me feel like a fool. They make me feel like I've asked them to do something that's totally wrong, that's totally unrighteous. And that doesn't make for a happy meal. That doesn't make for a happy meal. When a mother sets the table, when a mother prepares the meal, oh, she may have the children help setting the table and other people help doing things, but the mother is the ultimate. She looks at the table while her food is still cooking, makes sure that everything is in order. All the coffee cups are out, all the glasses for water and for milk and for other drinks that might be needed are out. Everything, the knives and forks are properly set around the tables and the spoons and the good things that are done. All the extra little plates are put where they're handy to be used if they're choosing to use it. Every time I mess up a plate, they grab the plate and take it away. But they don't always immediately replace it with a fresh plate. And so, therefore, I'm sitting dripping my tomato or my pear or peach or whatever over the tablecloth or over my napkin or whatever. And you see, when a person has the universal power of their statement carried out in perfect love and perfect right action, there will never be anything forgotten. There will never be anything that should have been there. In fact, there will be more things than are needed. Everything will be abundantly served, abundantly prepared, abundantly done. You say, well, Herb, you sound like you're crybabying over something. No, I am speaking about a principle. I am perfectly able to get up and get my own cup of coffee. I'm perfectly able to get up and do anything. But they choose to want to serve me. So in choosing to want to serve me, they should serve me. Otherwise, they should let me serve myself. And if they're going to serve me, then they should serve. This is the wonderful thing about having the opportunity to make meals, prepare the table, and to serve. It's the opportunity to take the universal potential of our statement and put it into focus, put it into right action. When you say, I am going to do something, then you do it. You don't say, oh, I forgot, or oh, I meant to do it, or oh, gee, let's do it differently or something, or I didn't think you wanted this here or that. You don't say that. The universal potential of our statements is carried out. If we say, I will do it, then do it. If you say, this is my choice, then do it. Now, when a mother or anyone who is in charge of doing anything, for instance, with the table, does not do their job well, the rest of the family lose interest in meals. They lose interest in coming to the table. They lose interest in participating at mealtime as a family affair where everyone joyfully joins in the conversation, adding little tidbits of nothingnesses, and just being sharing and caring. Yes, the potential of our words. It is fantastic. I say at mealtime, I say, well, Ingeborg, what did you do this morning? And Ingeborg says, well, I said, no. What did you do that was really exciting, that was really something that turned you on? Didn't you do anything that turned you on? Oh, yeah, sure, I did. Well, tell me about it, you know. And then she starts to tell me about it. Now I say, now, Ingeborg, why don't you tell me about it instantly when I ask you, instead of having to remember it? If it was really something that turned you on, then it is something that you have fresh in your mind. You see, this is what we do. Ingeborg's just an example there, but all of us do not think the things that we are thinking are important. We only think about the little dramas or the little exciting activities in our life, that they're important. But everything is important. Now, Sylvia could come in and say, oh, I just had the nicest experience. And I'd say, Sylvia, what was the nicest experience that you just had? Now, she's making a statement that she just had the nicest experience. And I'm jumping on that statement and I'm saying, what was it? And she said, do you know what I did this morning? And I said, well, I can imagine you did a lot of things, but what did you do? And so she says, well, I got up, went to the bathroom, did my toilet, came back, and I looked at my bed, and I said, thank you, bed, for a wonderful night's sleep. And I thought, cool. And then she says, bed, I am going to make you fresh. I'm going to pull the blankets off, and I'm going to straighten out the sheet and tuck it in tight and snugly, and I'm going to fluff up the pillow, I'm going to put down the several blankets that I'm using, and I'm going to tuck them in beautifully, and I'm going to make the bed as though I really appreciate the bed. And she says, you know, I made the bed like I really appreciate it, and I tucked in all the blankets and the sheets and everything, and fluffed up the pillow real nice, and then after I finished, I looked at the bed and I said, bed, you are wonderful. And I turned away to do other things. But all morning long, before I came to breakfast, I was thinking, what a wonderful bed I have. How comfortable it is. How thoughtful it is. I just have lovely dreams in that bed. That bed is so special, so wonderful. Now, have you ever emoted over your bed? Have you ever thought, hey, bed, thank you. I had lovely dreams last night. I had a nice sleep. Even if you didn't have too great a sleep, say thanks for what you did have. And then say, bed, I think it's time for you to be fluffed up. And so you tuck in your sheets and tuck them in real firm and beautiful. And then you fluff your pillow. And then you take your other sheets and your blankets and so on, and you lay them on the bed with love and precision so the corners just touch the floor here and there. So everything is in divine order. And if you have a cover over the bed, then that's even nicer. You put that on there and it keeps the dust off your blankets so that your blankets stay fresh longer. And it's just a wonderful thing. You love your bed and you give your bed all of that feeling. And so then the bed returns it to you. Because every time you look at that bed, you'll say, oh, that's a nice bed. I have such good dreams there. And that doesn't mean you want to go lay in the bed all the time. You don't want to do other things. But it's just, the bed is a happy thing. Now you look at your couch, too. Do you have a couch in your room, in your house? And do you look at that couch and say, oh, you're a wonderful couch. And then do you go fluff up the pillows on the couch? Do you push in the cushions on the couch so that they're all square and nice? Every time you look at it, every time. Not because it needs it, but because you want to do it. Because you're saying, what a wonderful thing. You're giving the universal power of your statements substance. You're giving universal power of your statements a carry on. So then every time you look at that bed, every time you look at that couch, every time you look at the dining room table or the kitchen table, every time you look at the setting, you think, wonderful. The comment had been made often, it's not my job to do that. It's our job to do anything. If we ever notice something missing from the table that should be there, the salt and pepper shaker or the honey or whatever things that should be there, go get them. Go get them. And put them there. And as you put them there, do it. I said the other day, well, Ingeborg, what are you doing putting the butter in the freezer? And she said, well, we always put the butter in the freezer. And I said, well, not now that I noticed it, you don't. The butter should be in the refrigerator so it's always at a nice spreadable rate. And she said, well, we're told to do it this way. We're told to do it this way. And so, at the meal table, I bring it up. I say, I told Ingeborg she should put the butter in the refrigerator and not in the freezer. And Ingeborg said that it's your custom to put it in the freezer. Now, why is it your custom to put it in the freezer when butter should be kept in the refrigerator so that you have it spreadable? And so Ellen says, well, sometimes we buy a large quantity of butter and we don't get to it as soon as we'd like to, so we want to keep it as fresh as we can, and so we put it in the freezer. And I say, oh, I see, okay, I understand that. And then the point comes to me, why don't we buy enough butter that we can keep it in the refrigerator, and then the next time we go shopping, we buy more butter? We don't have to buy such large quantities that we have to put it in the freezer, that we have to unstabilize the butter by putting it in the freezer. And you say, well, who says we're unstabilizing it? And I say, I do. Because every time I take the butter out of the freezer, I have to put it somewhere where it can thaw out before we can use it. And in the process of thawing out, it reconstitutes the butter and reestablishes the butter. Why do you think people like fresh foods instead of frozen foods? Why do you think people like to have foods that are fresh from the garden, or the fresher the better? Well, because every time we put another condition on it, like freezing or like cooling or anything, we are reconditioning that food. And it's not that fresh from the garden food that we like so much. Well, just think about those things. The universal power of our statements is rather fantastic. Do you say fresh foods are beautiful? Do you say frozen foods are okay? Okay, so there we go. You see, we do have such a universal power of our statements, and we have to be so careful how we use them. And we have to say, the table is always beautifully set. My coffee is always served to me lovingly. And I'm always used to serving myself. And I'm always used to doing these things for myself. And so when I run into people who want to serve me and who want to bring me things, it sort of gets to me a little bit, because I'm not used to that. And I have to readjust my thinking and readjust my attitude and readjust my statements about myself. And not that I'm worthy of being served, but whatever I'm served, it is the finest and the best. Whatever I am served, it is the finest and the best. Now, whatever I serve is the finest and the best. That's a big and a wonderful thing. Now, another thing about the universal power of our statements is this aspect, that we sometimes forget that when our statements and our actions do not correspond, then our statements become rather flat. You say, I'm always thoughtful, and then you're not. You say, I'm always caring, and then you're not. You say, I love everybody, and then you talk about other people sometimes in a way that's not loving. Our universal potential of our statements is so fabulous and so powerful that it behooves us very much to be so careful of what we say, what we think, and what we do. Well, have a nice breakfast and enjoy, because I do. Know that I love you. I love you. I love you.